This is Money in partnership with Switch, saving you time and money by automatically switching your energy provider whenever a better deal comes along. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining editor Simon Lambert and I today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, from holidays to cars to ethical investing, on today's episode we're looking at how consumer power and using our pounds wisely can help the planet too. And Simon calls on us to look after our own backyards. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But right, first, Simon, you are going to set out the stool for this podcast, actually, because you've been tapping away on your keyboard and the subject of your latest masterpiece, a rallying cry for lay-byism. Look after your backyard. Apparently. Now, you actually start, I rather like the article, where you start pretty positively, upbeat appraisal of the country, nice to hear these difficult times. Then you get to the local authorities and the businesses, and then it doesn't sort of sound so upbeat. But, go. What are you talking about, Simon?
What I'm talking about is the fact that for a long time, people have been labelled NIMBYs if they oppose anything near them. Often, they will oppose it with very good reason, largely because they may not be convinced that it's going to be done very well, or they don't want the area in which they live to be spoiled in some way. And this is considered to be a bad thing because it stands for not in my backyard. Now, I've always thought that one of the great things that you should encourage people to do is to look after your backyard, because if you don't look after your backyard, who the hell will? What, are you just going to rely on some other people from somewhere else? Or are you just going to rely on the government doing it? Or are you just going to rely on that nice, friendly, faceless corporation? Or that airport that wants to keep expanding? Or that really nice guy from the colossal housing developer that keeps flogging all those properties on dodgy leaseholds and building substandard homes? No, of course not. So the best thing for you to do is to look after it yourself. Now, despite our grumbles about many things and arguments about Brexit, etc., Britain is one of the greatest countries in the world to live in. To be born in Britain, to be born British, is to win one of life's great lotteries. You got lucky and you were born in a country which is safe, prosperous, free, and has more opportunity than most of the rest of the world.
I wasn't born here.
Okay, so then,
but I live here, so yeah, I feel
so
very
then
lucky.
So that's just a figure of speech. But if you are British, okay, if you are a resident, if you are a citizen in Britain, if you are a British person, okay, or you are a citizen in Britain, well, that's the reason why so many people want to come here, because it is a great country to live in, okay, and we have something that many other people in the rest of the world don't manage to get. Okay, now we've got our problems. You know, we've got some people in society who've got much, much less than other people. But broadly speaking, we live in a great country. Unfortunately, however, modern day Britain is also a country that demonstrates what happens when you just trust authorities and companies to do the right thing and take your eye off the ball. So the list. Companies flooding the consumer economy with unrecyclable packaging. Industrial farming damaging the land and waterways. Water companies polluting rivers and the sea. Relentless airport expansion against local opposition, poor quality housing, dodgy leases, closed hospitals, full schools, rip-off trains, run-down bus services left to private operators, a lack of meaningful public transport outside big cities. Anybody recognise any of those things? That's basically because we've not been paying enough attention. We've trusted people to do the right thing and they haven't done the right thing. Okay, and there's a growing mood that this has to stop. So how does it stop? Well, we could just trust them to do the right thing from now, or we could start to get a lot more active and put a lot more pressure on them. OK, so we can use the money that we have. Our consumer power is immense. If there's a company that won't make its crisp packets recyclable, stop buying its crisps. All of a sudden, things will start to change. Look at the wave of support for plastic bag tax, for protecting animals, for things like that. If you don't think that you can have a coherent stance of saying that you want to protect against climate change whilst relentlessly expanding airports, then stand up and do something about it and oppose it. If you think that all that land being released from the greenbelt on the edge of your town probably isn't a good thing, and where they want to build those 1,000 houses, they're going to be high density, low quality, get involved. Maybe you don't have to completely oppose the houses being built, because we do need more houses, but maybe you could try and make sure that those houses are built in a way that is sustainable, that they're of high quality, as eco as possible, that there are wildlife corridors left there. Maybe you could get more interested in things like regenerative farming and why that would make a huge difference to carbon capture and really help with climate change. There's all these things that you can do. And so what I was saying is that people should look after their backyard, and next time someone calls them a NIMBY, defend themselves in that way.
Hear, hear, Simon. Hear, hear. Well, we're going to stick with that theme. Doing good, I guess, for your backyard, for the planet, for your fellow human, is not just about reusable coffee cups, plastic bags that you were talking about, even flying less. It also means which companies get our money. And when I say which companies get our money, I mean when we're talking about investing. So most of us just assume when it comes to green investments, they must back those funds and firms that have robust ethical credentials. But there is a growing movement where savers who want to combat climate change are investing a small amount of money in the very companies eco-activists traditionally rail against. We'll talk about that. Things like fossil fuel giants, Shell and BP. So I'm going to go back to you, Simon, because I know this is your bag, but it seems somewhat counterintuitive. Why is this the case?
Well, there's two ways that you can invest to try and improve the environment, help the planet, or just do the right thing. You can either invest in an investment that actively tries to do that. So, for example, I have some money in an investment trust called Impact Environmental Markets. That targets basically companies that are trying to solve the sort of environmental problems that we face, whether that might be trying to create a better way of growing cotton or better materials for clothing, because cotton is hideously bad for the environment, or ways of doing smart farming so that you can get better yields with using less, so you can rely less on fertilizers that are really bad for the land. You can have a better chance of going organic and still getting really good yields, and that protects the land better. It's much better for carbon capture. So it does that kind of thing. Or you can do this ESG investing, which is very popular at the moment, environmental, social and governance, which tries to look at environmental factors, social impact factors, and also corporate governance, so companies that are doing the right thing. And there's plenty of different funds and trusts that you can do this. Or you can try and actively invest in the companies that are seen as being quite bad for the planet and for the world, and try and make them change their ways. So here we come to the example. Yeah, it can, because as a shareholder, you have a stake in a company and you have the right to go to the AGM and have your voice heard. You can go to the Shell or the BP AGM and you can put your hand up, you can ask them a question, you can have your voice heard. But if you get together with lots of other shareholders, you dramatically increase the chance of having that voice heard, getting that question in, and actually being able to change something. And to be honest, the big oil companies like to defend themselves by saying, well, yeah, we are a big oil company, but we probably spend more money on trying to improve the environment than most other companies combined. Now, whether you buy that argument or not, okay, the more active a shareholder base they have trying to encourage them to do that, the more they are actually going to be forced to do it. And so there's an investor alliance called Climate Action 100 Plus, which has long been a supporter of this idea. And to give an example of this, in 2017, investors persuaded Shell to pledge to reduce its carbon footprint and invest in green projects. Doesn't sound like much, but it is a massive global oil and energy company. Firms such as Legal and General Investment Management and this investor alliance, Climate Action Plus, been supporters of this approach. And so you've got big institutional investors like L&G who are also trying to bring pressure onto these companies and get them to change. So if you are going to do it, I mean, ideally what you would do is you would buy shares in Shell and then try and make your voice heard and try and make them change. Just buying shares in Shell and sitting back and not doing anything and collecting the dividends doesn't really work in this sense.
No, not really. Lee, I'm glad Simon pointed that out, because when we talk about, and I mentioned it at the start, you know, investing ethically, we don't just mean about climate change. So whether you think climate change is real or not, I mean, this is about how workers are treated, how a company is run, all of these things. Do you think people care more now when you talk about investing?
I think definitely so. I think we've got a new wave of younger investors as well that are kind of quite conscious about where their money is going and where what it's been, you know, what these companies are doing to the planet. There's been such a massive driver, and we have spoken about on this podcast more this year than I think in previous years put together, haven't we? We have spoken a lot about green issues that have just all of a sudden become really one of the forefront talking points, along with Brexit, in this country and globally in the last couple of years. And I think, you know, people do care. They do want to feel like they're doing something good. You know, we can all hold our hands up and say, we're not perfect. We're not doing things all the time that are brilliant for the planet. Of course we're not. But there's little things that we can change. If we can make some of these big companies change just small amounts, that makes a huge, huge difference. And it's great to see Simon's example there, you know, 2017 Shell. If more companies like that are forced from these sort of activist investors to do these kind of things, it would be great to see.
Right, coming up after the break, planes, trains and automobiles. This is Money in partnership with Switched. Here's Tom Rogers, one of the co-founders, to explain more.
So we all know we could save a lot on our energy bills by regularly switching deals, but most of us don't, me included, because it's a faff and quite frankly, we've got better things to do. So that's why we created Switched, which is an impartial automatic energy switching service. With Switched, all you have to do is sign up once and it's all taken care of for you. You'll be switched to the absolute best deal and then automatically switched again whenever the time is right. That means with just one sign up, you could be saving hundreds on your energy bill every single year.
Right, into part two. Now, we don't have to all do a Greta Thunberg sail for 2 weeks to our next holiday destination to lower our carbon footprint. Though that does actually, I have to say, sound rather fun. No, in the big shift that Lee was talking about there towards society being more environmentally conscious, the two biggies are, well, it seems meat, the amount of meat we eat, and flights. Now, a study last year found tourism's global carbon footprint has increased four times more than previously estimated, accounting for about 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So what can we do to be a more eco-friendly tourist, bar staying at home or sailing? You have a few tips. Just firstly, what's the issue with travel though, Lee?
Sorry, 2 weeks of sailing does not sound fun to me.
I did a week and a half and I loved it, honestly. I got...
seasick?
No, I got land legs or something. Yeah, I was fine.
Sea legs.
I was fine on the boat. Didn't get sick at all. I was sick as a dog when I actually landed. Yeah, so I stayed on the boat. I think.
Although the thing is she's not going on a cruise, a little sort of yacht round Croatia or the Greek islands.
I was on the Galapagos.
My understanding is that she's sailing across the Atlantic. Is that not correct?
It's not going to be a little poodle around, you know, sort of cruisy thing. It's going to be a real kind of clipper race sort of,
I've seen inside
of those boats. Ooh, my word.
If it takes her 2 weeks to get there and 2 weeks to get back, that's the school holidays done, isn't it?
That's what I was thinking about. Anyway, Lee, you were answering the question. 12 tips, issues with travel.
Yeah, so actually, I'll start with a bit beginning of this. There's been a massive surge in people looking at ways to basically cut back on the carbon emissions that they're creating, their carbon footprint, basically, when they travel. Most of us like to travel. Most of us like adventure, like to go and see some of the world. And we're in an era now where we're so fortunate. Our generation literally have been brought up on a diet of flights that are pretty much cheap enough and accessible enough for most. And that's, you know, our parents' generation, you know, have had that. But probably beyond that, you know, the world is our oyster. It really is our oyster now. I can get to Perth in 17 hours, Georgie. That is incredible, non-stop. I mean, that blows my mind. Does that blow your mind?
17 hours,
It blows my mind that you can do that. You can get to Australia in one go. Now, anyway, there's people that are... The growing trend is there's been a 40% growth in people searching eco-travel in the last year from Britain. And it's been driven largely by millennials. So they want to know what they can be doing to travel greener, essentially. And we have compiled a bit of a list. And as we've said in this article, this is not to preach to people. This is not to say to people, don't travel, don't have fun. These are little things you could do if you want to do them. If you don't want to do them, don't do them. It's the power of choice, isn't it? It's completely up to you. Now, I won't go through all of the tips, but some of the ones that I like here are, that one of them is to choose your destination carefully. Now, what we mean by that is that there's a list, for example, of the top 100 sustainable destinations that you can go, and you know that there's some countries that you go to and you want to see nature, you want to see some of the absolutely wonders of nature that they have in that country.
Galapagos.
But how well is it being looked after? Are there lots of people banging into there, you know, all at the same time? I think of an example of when I was in Thailand, and they've now shut that beach that was on the beach, the film, because I went and it was absolutely disgusting. People, boats, petrol everywhere. It was just absolutely horrendous. And I came away from that trip feeling a little bit disgusted with myself that I was part of that problem, that I'd taken a boat there and helped destroy a bit of nature in a country which perhaps needs more help to save such nature. So from that point onwards, I have been a little bit more conscious about how I travel and what we're doing. This is a stat that Simon pulled out a little while ago about only 15% of people from Britain take 70% of all flights.
That's extraordinary.
That is an extraordinary figure. So if you are someone that perhaps goes away 3-4 times a year by flight, you know, maybe one of those trips that you take, you decide to stay in Britain and do something absolutely magical in this country. That's something I've definitely been doing more of in the last couple of years. It's been places that I'd never been to that's actually blown me away in the last couple of years in this country. And it's
trips
been...
where Willie? So I was trying to decide this, and I thought, shall I go abroad? And then I've had people go Hebrides, Galway, you know, all these sort of places. I thought, I could do that. I
went to the Forest of Dean recently. That was absolutely beautiful. I had 5 days, phone off, just in the middle of nowhere, detox holiday. I think there's been a big drive in that. People wanted to get away from it all, get in the middle of nature, turn your phone off, just enjoy. You know, ditched the car and we just took all of these walking routes. And I'll be honest with you, it was absolutely incredible. So anyway, some of the other tips in here, we spoke to a lot of, like, you know, green organisations. So one of the ones that we spoke to was Greenpeace, and actually they came up with, I think, quite sensible advice. I think people, they hear Greenpeace and they think it's going to be all like, don't fly, you know.
Yeah.
And
I said, actually, militant kind of. Yeah.
They said, you know, minimise travel. If you want a sunny beach, try the Med before the Caribbean. So they're not saying don't go on a, you know, beach holiday and fly, but perhaps just think before you go. If you want mountains, try the Alps before the Andes. And that's the thing, is thinking about where you could go and selecting your destination carefully. Some other really quick things that you could do, you can look for sort of like greener hotels. So TripAdvisor, for example, have a green leaders program. So when you're looking for a hotel, you can see on TripAdvisor, if it's got a little green leaf next to it, it's got green credentials, so it's more likely to have a less of a footprint. Someone from Travel Supermarket said, check if the hotel has an environmental policy on its website.
Meaning what? Like they don't wash all their sheets every
day? Well,
or...
this is it. This is, again, this is it. Does the hotel have purchased recyclable goods where it can? Does it encourage guests to reuse towels? Does it have measures to conserve energy? Does it use local food to reduce food miles and support the local economy? Does it monitor and review its environmental impacts and policies on an ongoing, regular basis? And does it provide bulk refillable toiletries rather than plastic
miniatures?
Good, I was
about to ask about those.
That's the thing that's currently happening, isn't it? We're going to see all of these little toiletries, plastic toiletries,
good,
ditched.
That's
There's going to be
ridiculous.
Way more of those, sort of like, you know, you're in the shower and you have to press that thing and get it out. You know,
that's
absolutely fine. You know, for me, that's not a problem at all. For some people who like to still send little miniatures, if anyone's listening,
bring your own.
Bring your own. Other quick things. I quite like this idea. So leave the car at home. So this is a website called pitchup.com. And basically, they've got a search function on its website where you can decide little things that you can do that are a little bit greener and whether that facility offers it or not. And one of the things you can tick is leave the car at home campsite. What that means is that you could get to a train to train. You know, trains are expensive, but if it works for you, you can get a train close to said campsite and they will come and pick you up in a sort of green method, whether that's an electric vehicle or another form. They will get you to that campsite without you having to take the car. Now, that's quite it can be quite difficult because obviously you've probably got a lot of gear in the back, but they will try and make it as easy as possible, as in they've probably got tents already set up for you and all that sort of thing. If you're hiring a vehicle, see if you can get an electric vehicle rather than you know, your usual hire car. That's becoming more of a thing. It's not completely easy to do at the moment, but it's getting there. you could ditch transport altogether. I love going away and I just walk everywhere. I really don't use much transport when I go away, especially those sort of city breaks, cycling, walking around. Just one bit of advice that my dad always gave me was just walk around and look up. You just miss so much if you go somewhere and you don't do that and you just speed around. How many people come to London? The tube network is fantastic, but how many people just get on the tube and don't see between A and B because they've just literally jumped on the tube? It's so much nicer just to walk around, look at things.
I love walking around London. Even though I live here, I always see something I haven't seen before.
Absolutely love it. I'll keep these brief now. So buy local, I mean, that goes without saying. If you fancy it, eat a little bit less meat and dairy. I mean, we had this report out recently saying how bad it is, you know, how really, really bad it is. Maybe just a couple of times decide that you're not going to eat meat while you're away. If you want to do that, do it. If you don't.
I love this. Yeah, and, if you want to do it too, Jeff.
And actually, I'll finish on one last thing and something that I've definitely been guilty of in the past, and I'm going to admit this and I don't really care. I always like having a bath when I go on a holiday here and there. You know, you go to a fancy hotel and it's got like a really nice like copper standalone bath and then you fill up the whole bath.
You go to different hotels.
Yeah,
mate,
perhaps, but don't do that. I won't do that anymore. That's just so daft. Just take a quick shower instead of taking a bottle of champagne in said copper bath. I mean, these are little things that definitely you can change.
Playboy boys.
Yeah, my holiday Lee's holiday habits revealed.
Can I just make a point though? What you could do is just not take that bath two times a day. You could just take one of those baths and savour that bath on that week. And also, there's an important thing to note here, in that lots of people, and it depends who they are not convinced by climate change, okay? This is reflected in our comments all the time from people. Lots of ordinary people out there are not convinced. Now, if you're a certain type of person and you think a certain type of way, you will be absolutely convinced and you'll think it's insane that people can't be convinced by climate change. But there's lots of people who aren't. Now, there's a statistic that says between 80 and 98% of the world's climate expert scientists believe that man-made climate change is a problem,
that's
is exacerbated.
Man-made climate
change. Yeah, man exacerbated. So it's exacerbated. Yeah. So what we're doing is we pumped a load of CO2 into the atmosphere and we have exacerbated natural climate change. Now, I was away at the weekend. I was with a large group of people at a party, my father-in-law's party, and lots of people there are very environmentally active, socially active, left-leaning. They're exactly the kind of people who think this. No, this wasn't an outreach program. I was there for a party. But I was having a conversation with someone and I was saying, you know, lots of people are not convinced. And he said, yeah, he said he loves it when he hears the thing where it says, well, look, it's 98% of scientists, but scientists only make up about 2% of the population. So it's not even 98% people. I was like, yeah, it's not even 98% scientists, 98% climate expert scientists. Yeah. But the point is that even if you're not convinced, okay, it makes sense to look after where you live and it makes sense to look after the places you visit.
Going back to lay-by-ism.
And it makes sense to look after the planet because don't trash where you live is just common sense. And I think that any objective look at what we have done over the last, you know, 5 decades is that we have not properly looked after the planet that we look on. And so whether you think climate change is extremely pressing and we need to do something within the next 10 years, or whether you think, well, maybe I'm just not quite convinced, or whether you think it's a massive hoax, it doesn't matter. Just look after the place because, you know, you've got to walk around there and live in it.
It also has other consequences, and I believe at the time when they were trying to fix the crime rate in New York, the first thing they did was this broken windows policy. Cleaning up the area where you live actually reduced crime. So there you go. And is it lay-by-ism? Lubby-ism? That sounds weird.
Lay-by. All right. Look after your backyard.
I've got to be careful.
I didn't put an ism on it. And if everybody looked after their backyard and all their backyards were joined up, that would pretty much cover the whole of the country.
Glad you've cleared that up. Right, just finally, from planes and trains to automobiles, it's hard enough trying to predict how rapidly a normal car would appreciate, but estimating the loss of value of an electric vehicle, Lee Sharp, is a whole other ballgame. As battery technology advances and manufacturers launch newer models with longer ranges, more performance and shorter charging times, the electric cars of today could be considered old hat in a relatively short period of time. So how do you make sure an electric vehicle you buy today has the best chance of enduring the test of time? Simon, quit one of this.
Well, I mean, you can't, because the thing is the technology is moving on so quickly. The range is getting extended all the time. And so it's very, very difficult. And so there's some research that was done into the depreciation on the electric cars and basically how much various electric cars depreciate by. And what you will find is that some of the cars that are considered to be more likely to be overtaken by other cars that have a longer range and things like that are near the bottom of the pile for depreciation, such as, for example, the Renault Zoe, where there's also an issue where it's quite clever in that most people's concern is about the battery. And so what Renault does is rent you the battery. So you buy the car and then you rent the battery. But actually the cost of that is quite high. And so if you're doing it to save money as well as save the planet, all of a sudden you're spending quite a lot of money every month on the battery. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the Nissan Leaf. Now, the old Nissan Leaf would have lost quite a lot of its value. The new Nissan Leaf, on the other hand, has taken a major step up and has a range of more than 200 miles. So that retains a lot of its value. Up the top of the tree, though, are the expensive electric cars that you can buy. The Tesla Model S, the Tesla Model X, which is the 4x4 version, and the Jaguar I-Pace, made by a British company, which is great, considered to be one of the benchmark electric vehicles. Not many of them have actually managed to make it onto the roads yet, because there's a long waiting list, and that will be keeping up the prices in terms of depreciation.
I was rather impressed. Someone down my street has just bought a new Tesla. That makes it sound like it's a posh street. I don't know if we actually live there. But what I will recommend to that person is please do park normally and not pretty much across the road, because nothing's going to depreciate the value of your car than someone smashing into the back of it. Anyway, this is Money in partnership with Switch, saving you time and money by automatically switching your energy provider whenever a better deal comes along. For more information or to get started, go to switched.co.uk. And you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any questions, issues, if you want to moan about climate change, Simon?
Email us if you've got problems that you need help with, editor@thisismoney.co.uk. Tweet us @thisismoney if you want to join in the conversation, or come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast, where you can read all of the podcasts past and you can argue to your heart's content about climate change, NIMBYs, laybys, and all those other things in the comments.
And if you do like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? Helps people find us.